This is a recording from the Piedmont Council of the Arts, brought to you by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com. There are many ways to stay in touch with what we do at the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. You can sign up for our Twitter feed, become our fan on Facebook, sign up for our email list, or just visit sevillepodcast.com every day. There's always new audio for you to listen to about our community. That brings us to the subject of this podcast. This year, the Piedmont Council of the Arts has launched something called the Creative Conversation Series. It's a local forum for arts-related ideas to be exchanged between members of the community. The goal of the program is to bring artists, organizations, educators, and business and community leaders together to develop strategies for strengthening arts and cultural life in the Charlottesville area. This conversation, which is the third in the series, explores increasing community-wide access to the arts. Here's PCA Executive Director Maggie Guggenheimer.
For any of you who I have not yet introduced myself to, I'm Maggie Guggenheimer, Director of Piedmont Council of the Arts. This is Kate Dodrell, our Communications Manager, who will sadly be leaving us in the next month or so to go to get an MFA at Cranbrook, which is quite an accomplishment just to have gotten in. But this is the third in Piedmont Council of the Arts Creative Conversation Series, which is a new program we started this year to bring people together to start talking about issues related to the arts in our community. PCA has in the past done something called a roundtable discussion series that was primarily for the performing arts sector to look at audience development, how to get more people coming out to participate in performing arts, and we decided that we wanted to bring that back and broaden it beyond the performing arts sector to the other art genres and even more broadly to the community at large and bring some people who may not be coming to the table with a position in an arts organization or as a local artist, but as a community leader or as a leader in a community organization that can bring some expertise to the arts sector that we don't already have. And Kate and I began to develop the program, I guess, last summer based on a model of the organization called Americans for the Arts, which is a national arts advocacy group. Their website is americansforthearts.org. And they actually call the program that we modeled this after Creative Conversation Series. So if you're interested in looking at the broader example or the example that we looked at to create this series, check out their website. A little bit more on the Creative Conversation Series this year. We had three topics. The first topic is arts education in our community, which we discussed in September. And actually, a few of you who are here right now were part of that conversation. The second topic we discussed was marketing Charlottesville as a creative community. That was in January, and this is the third, increasing community-wide access to the arts. And I was reflecting on both of the first conversations in preparation for this one. Obviously, when we started in September, we had no clue what we were getting into, and we just sort of thought, well, we'll see where this goes and see what people have to say when we get everyone in a room together. And it went a lot of different places fast, and it was exciting, and it was a great way to meet new people and exchange ideas. But ultimately, the arts education conversation seemed to be an end in and of itself. People weren't very interested in follow-up meetings or collaborative initiatives in response to the conversation, but they had really enjoyed the opportunity to connect and start talking to each other in a new way. The marketing conversation, on the other hand, led to a lot of ideas and a lot of suggestions for what we could be doing as a community to further market Charlottesville and the Charlottesville area as an arts destination, both for locals and for visitors. And we were a little bit surprised at that response because we had had such a different response from the first one. And so now as I approach this third one, I don't quite know what to tell you. I'm not sure whether we should be looking at next steps together as a group, we should be looking at this conversation as something that's sort of an end in and of itself. And I'd invite you to think about that as we discuss and help me understand what you think would be best. And it's most likely that next year, as we engage in a creative conversation series again, we'll look at the same kinds of topics, since there was so much there, but in a slightly different format, perhaps in smaller focus group kinds of formations, meeting more frequently with fewer people. And then perhaps in 2010-11, we'll come back to a larger roundtable format so that we can kind of contract and expand as we go through the topics together as a community. So that is the big overview of the pilot year of a program that has been really exciting for us. Hi, Rose. Has been very exciting for us and challenging and opening up a whole new area of ideas for what PCA as the local arts council could do, but also the arts community members could do together. And we hope that it isn't just asking questions year after year, but hopefully that we start doing some action steps forward based on what we learn in the conversations. And in terms of action steps, I would say that PCA has been funded by the Charlottesville Area Community Foundation to engage in an arts access project starting this summer. So I'm not going to take too much time explaining the project right now, but I may give you more information as we talk together, because it's so directly related to this conversation today. And it's not a lot of funding. It's going to be a small-scale sort of pilot project, but it's a lot for PCA, and we hope that we can do a lot with it based on the information that we gather today. So unless there are any questions, I thought we should get going on some introductions now that a few more folks are here. Let's start on this side, because we always start on this side. So. Just keep it brief, but tell us anything that you find relevant to the conversation today about who you are.
I'm Sibley Johns. I work at the Music Resource Center. We're an after-school music education program for middle and high school students.
I'm Damani Harrison. I work at the Music Resource Center as well.
My name is Rose Hill. I'm a resident artist at McGuffey. And I'm also part of From Inside Out. It's a prison art program here in Central Virginia.
Ken Moore, consumer advocate at Region 10. I've studied art and been in performance arts at various times in my life.
I'm Christine Nardi with the Center for Nonprofit Excellence. And our mission is to provide training tools and resources to the nonprofit community. And I know that many here today are members.
Rhonda Hewitt, I'm the Education Outreach Director at Live Arts, and I run a theater program for youth from the ages 7 to 80.
I'm Mildred Spicer with Charlottesville Parks and Recreation, Therapeutic Recreation Services, and VSA Arts, which was formerly known as Very Special Arts.
I'm Bree Luck, and I am the Outreach Director for Lighthouse Studios, which is a media education center for young people in Charlottesville, primarily teens. And then I also am the Director of the Voice Project, which is a prison theater project.
Molly Hatcher, Director of Programs for the Charlottesville Area Community Foundation. I oversee the grant making for the foundation, and very happy to support many nonprofits in this town, the good work you all do.
Dave Norris, Mayor of the City of Charlottesville, and I'm just here to learn how we can improve access to the arts.
Jane Fisher of the Charlottesville Community Design Center, and we have a gallery as part of our program in some ways, looking to ways to improve accessibility to it.
I'm Gloria Rockhold. I work with Albemarle County Schools, Latino Community Relations, and I have this job until the end of June because the funding, my position is no longer funded. In any event, my interest is to share art with the Latino population. I work a lot in Southwood. I don't know if yesterday there was an article in the paper about the book that we published, the children's photographs, and I'd like to duplicate the same program in the summer, including more of the written word and maybe the spoken word in conjunction with the visual. So it's a project that I hope I can make it sustainable so that even if I'm not in the area, then you know people can jump in and run with that program. So I really feel that the underserved population needs to look a little bit more into the creative side to be successful.
Shrika Noel, I work with Urban Vision over in Friendship Court, low-income housing community. I work with servicing the residents with any program and needs that they may need. And I'm hoping to learn more about the arts program to bring it to my residents over in Friendship Court.
I'm Emily Nelson. I'm a third-year art student at UVA, and I'm the president of the Art Student Society there. And I also help run a program called Early Visions through the UVA Art Museum that connects the art museum with children at the Boys and Girls Club.
Gary Funston with Charlottesville Jazz Society. I mainly book artists for our monthly artist educator series, and also try to come up with some special events with out-of-town groups, and hopefully do some outreach with some of you folks here.
I'm Joel Rubin. I direct the music performance program at the university, McIntyre Department of Music, and I'm involved also in a lot of university-wide initiatives to increase the visibility and accessibility to the arts at UVA. I work together with Bruce and with people from the film festival and from the art department and the dance department and drama department and so forth. And also to increase our accessibility to the community and the community's accessibility to us. And we have various collaborations with different folks, including with Gary and with the Music Resource Center and so forth, but we're always looking for more ways of getting out into the community.
I'm Annie Yoder from Charlottesville Abundant Life Ministries. I studied music and have been able to work for Abundant Life in the Fifield area community. Rydell can probably tell you a little more about Abundant Life.
I'm Rydell Payne, and we provide services to kids and families in the Prospect Avenue neighborhood, holistic programming. Help people grow educationally, spiritually, economically, and we're wanting to bring more excellence of arts to our community in different ways. So just here to learn and here to also cultivate or understand where there may be resources to get a program started as well.
My name is Bruce Boucher, and since March the 2nd, I've been the director of the University of Virginia Art Museum, and we have a number of different programs with which we address various communities within the community, and I've come here to listen and to learn.
I'm Marty Phillips, also with the Charlottesville Jazz Society. Gary and I work together to help promote live jazz in Charlottesville. We've been around since December of 2005, and certainly hope to have an opportunity to speak to some people maybe from the Music Resource Center and other possible collaborations to do things in the future.
I'm Jessica Thayer. I'm a citizen. I work with gifted and sensitive individuals, and I'm fairly new to Charlottesville, and I've just been mystified about issues of visibility and accessibility in and of the arts of Charlottesville.
Karen, you joined. We were just going around to do introductions, so if you want to introduce yourself, please.
I'm Karen Waters. I'm the Executive Director of the Quality Community Council. Come on over here, Harold, you can introduce yourself. Our mission is to improve the quality of life in targeted city neighborhoods by engaging folks across race, geographic, and other boundaries.
Harold? Hey. Make for you to introduce yourself as you're sitting down.
I'm Harold Foley. I have many hats. I run an after school program. I'm organized with BOP, and I'm a community leader.
Great. Well, thank you everyone for coming. I think this is the most non-arts organization representatives I've ever had around a table coordinated by PCA, so this is really exciting for me because I know I'll learn a lot. I want to say a few sort of housekeeping things before we jump in. First is that we will have lunch generously provided by Harvest Moon around 1, and at that time we're going to break out into small group discussions that we'll sort of organically design as we talk. And so who knows what you'll be talking about or who you'll be talking with, but we'll figure that out between now and 1. And I also want to thank the Charlottesville Podcasting Network for recording the conversation so that we can make other people in the community aware of the things that we talked about today via our website and the Charlottesville Podcasting Network's website. Thank the City of Charlottesville for letting us use this space, and PCA members who helped make all this happen free of cost to participants. So those are the thank yous. And the last and most important bit of information is that we don't have any of the answers to the questions on this sheet, and we're not expecting you to either, but we hope that you will drive this conversation forward, ask more questions than what you see here on the guiding question sheet, and help me really take this where you want it to go. So, without further ado, let's start talking. I think it's probably best to begin with the first question on the sheet. What does it mean for the arts to be accessible in a community? And that, as Bruce mentioned, that could be communities within our community. So however you interpret that question, or if you see other elements farther down on the sheet that you want to weave into it, somebody get us started with a comment or a question, please.
I think visibility and affordability are two key components to making the arts accessible in our community, in any community. So getting the word out that these resources exist in the community, and then helping people be able to access them in a way that is open to people from all kinds of economic backgrounds is really critical.
I have follow-up questions regarding that. I've asked Rhonda from Live Arts to join us today because I'm particularly interested in Live Arts Pay What You Can Night. And in terms of affordability, there's something in town that should be affordable to everybody, conceivably. And I'm curious, how diverse is the audience for Pay What You Can Night?
It's usually a very young crowd. A lot of college-age students tend to come to that. It's something that Live Arts has had from the beginning, which was first started in 1990, and we've been able to keep it by finding sponsors out of the community to help underwrite it. You know, we found what the basic difference between that and a normal sort of night that might be full. Mm-hmm. And asked to try and find sponsors. And what it means, literally, is that anyone can come up to our box office that day of that performance and say, I'd like two tickets, and our box office manager says, how much would you like to give for it? And they can say $1 or $10 or whatever, and they will get those tickets.
And Rhonda, how would people in the community know about that possibility?
We tend to advertise it in any way possible that we can, either in our playbills or our website, in ads that we run in Seville, in our e-blasts. We get that information out there as in many marketing venues as we possibly can.
But most of those venues are where people have to already know about you, have gone to your website, picked up your playbill. They already have to have an awareness that you exist, except you say in the paper.
Right, it's not just the playbill. It's in whatever marketing sources that we use.
So I've never heard that. I would be curious to the people that are here, can we have a show of hands of how many people knew that they were giving that opportunity for people? Who knew about it?
This is actually good, because about maybe 3 years ago I would expect no hands. Because we realized about 3 years ago that only a small collection of regulars even knew about it. So we actually have made a concerted effort to put PR and marketing dollars into trying to get the word out. So I'm actually very
excited. And for the shows that you offer that to, how does attendance differ between pay for performance versus the pay it whatever you can, in terms of the numbers of people showing up?
Exactly, yeah. We're starting to see an equilibrium where it's just another night at the theater, especially it's every Wednesday. So it's a weeknight, it's not on the weekend. And it's usually the first show of that particular week of performances. We usually do Wednesday through Saturday with some Sunday matinees. And it's the same time, the actors and everyone gives the same performance. And it's just another opportunity that usually has the same number of house participants as audience members. We found just a little bit of difference in that, because we want to keep the program going and being able to offer that, we look for the funding from sponsors to help sort of supply us what we would get in the difference. Let's say someone offers $10 for two tickets. Our development director has calculated what that would be across the board.
What does that differential tend to be between?
I don't have that information with me. I could ask our development director. Who?
Do you think it's like half, or? I mean, I'm not asking for a dollar amount.
It's roughly maybe around that. A lot of times, what we will find, though, surprisingly, is, and I've asked the box office manager about this, that people will ask, what's the normal price? And a lot of times people will offer the normal price of a normal ticket, but it's surprising the number of people who will do that even on a pay-what-you-can night to help support the theater. But we don't ask that. We don't tell them what the normal price is. It's only if they ask us. We just say, whatever you have to offer, we'll take. And it's the day of the performance.
So you said that it seems to attract a younger audience. And I don't mean to put live arts on that program on the spot. I think it's a wonderful resource in our community. But I think it's a good launching point for this conversation because we've already kind of touched on a few things. One, the marketing challenge, getting the word out to just the people in this room, let alone people that may not be picking up Seville every week to read it or even know that Live Arts exists and it's a place where you can see theater. But I'm curious about beyond just the age diversity factor. I mean, there's so many different ways that our community is diverse. And I want to start talking about all of those ways, especially the more complicated ones, like income level, race, and even geography in terms of where people are situated in our community. And how diverse is the audience of Pay What You Can Night in some of those arenas, and not just for live arts, but for other arts experiences that some of you might participate in that aren't very expensive?
And can we return to the question of accessibility? Because I think that sort of cuts across all of that. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, in terms of, when I think of accessibility, I think of variation of arts offerings and venues, and right? For some people, Fridays after 5 might be considered art. So Pay What You Can Night is one night at one specific time, but if you have an increased diversity of offerings, and I might go to Pay What You Can Night for one play but not go for another. Mm-hmm. I might like comedies and not tragedies. So I think diversity of arts offerings in terms of location, times, availability, and mediums all speak to reaching a wider audience.
I would just add to the whole accessibility issue. Well, first of all, the issue with Old Capitol Hall, we have this wonderful concert hall, but it's not very easy for people to get to it, or it's perceived as not being easy to get to. So that's an issue for us. Parking, as everybody knows on campus, is notoriously bad. But we're trying to get the word out that people can, for example, park downtown or take the free trolley. It's not as hard to get to as people think. We have over 100 music events there per year, so we're pretty maxed out in space. So another issue besides trying to get people to come to us is getting us out into the community. We're starting to do concerts. Well, we do a few things at Live Arts. We do, unfortunately, we were trying to do a few events at Gravity Lounge. Now that's apparently they've been locked out of their space. But anybody who has ideas in terms of alternate venues, that's one of our big issues. Also, we have almost 900 seats in Old Cowell, but a lot of our performances attract an audience from maybe 75 to 150, and we're looking for smaller venues. So that's one issue. The other thing is the accessibility in terms of people knowing about it. We all have websites and all that stuff, and we Twitter, and we do all these things, but you know, we're still not sure, you know, how do we get people to look at our websites? How do we get people to read our emails? It's hard to kind of identify, how do we know which are the right papers to place ads in for specific events? It's not that easy to sort all that out.
Well, if I could just follow on from what Joel said, he raised a very interesting issue, and that's why when I introduce myself, I refer to communities as opposed to community, because we at the University of Virginia Art Museum have several different communities, and they don't necessarily overlap. There's some people who will only look at something if you send them something in the mail as a hard copy. There are other people who will look at emails or electronic information. There's some people who maybe read The Hook or Seville, something like that. Then there are other people, a lot of students nowadays, prefer to get things on their telephones as downloads. So I think we're living in an age where there are overlapping layers of technology, and we have to use all of them to try to reach the different audiences that are out there, the ones that like comedy and the ones that like tragedy.
My name is Robin Hoffman. I'm an artist here in Charlottesville for about 2.5 years. Since I've been here, I've volunteered, and this year I'm volunteering. I'm volunteering for VSA and different things, and it's I'm sort of networking for the community without really, you know, just doing it. It's just things are falling in place. But I want to put this idea out to you to begin with. What I've been trying to do with the Virginia Artists in Action, which is a organization that we started in October, and what it does is it promotes artists who are fundraising for different charities. So if you're an artist, you join this membership. There's a gallery now at York Place. But what ultimately I wanted to do when we started this organization, and this is what I want to partake right now, is start programming art. And what does this entail? This entails putting programs of everybody's work here on visual images and projecting them not just in hotels, hospitals, restaurants, but in schools through telemedicine. Telemedicine at UVA right now is connected to all the schools, it's connected to Iraq, it's connected to Japan, and it has not been tapped. They're just sitting on the technology. The hospital is farming it out for x-rays and things like that, but you can go there right now as an artist and partake in their technology. That's an aside. But the programming part, the aspect that is going on right now in San Francisco and New York City is projections, and it's also in the Kennedy Center, and it's also in Washington. But you have to sort of discover it for yourselves. But, for instance, putting on a projection right now on the wall, in a school, in a hotel, in a hospital, and in that projection is everything that we talked about right now, the jazz, the dance, the pottery, the art, everything, into one visual image somewhere in a facility. And in doing that, you have to have a programmer. This is what I'm looking for. This is what VAI is looking for. This is what I'm trying to share with the community. If you think about that and you project that image, an artist can get paid $1.50 an image. If they have six images in that projection, they can get paid per month. And if part of that goes to the nonprofits, then the restaurant people or the hotel people or the hospital people can benefit. Anyway, that's just an idea, and I just wanted to give it to you.
Now, going back to the original question, when I think of accessibility, I'm thinking of arts community reaching out to all people so that the audience is a really diverse background, trying to reach all income levels, all races, disabilities, ages. That's what I think of accessibility.
Well, my name is Harold Foley. I guess everyone knows me. Bree Luck does Lighthouse, and she comes to West Haven. And the people who we serve sort of don't get arts like that. And Bree knows for herself, we have to knock on doors just to get people interested about art. So we can sit and talk about how we can get a segment of people involved, but you gotta be there in their face to do it. We can't, you know, just be here talking about it. And when I say of the, you know what I'm saying, a segment of groups, I'm talking about a diverse group. I'm talking about African Americans, Hispanics. I'm talking about you have to be there to let them know what's going on. And there's so many groups in here that represent a lot of people. But I run an after school program, and I never, and this is how it is, I never got any notion from anybody to say, hey, here's some free tickets if you want to send kids somewhere, here's some free information. But that's the way you can get people involved who normally don't be involved. You know, I see a lot of Piedmont Theater. I see, you know, the UVA Art Museum, you know, invite people who normally don't want, who wouldn't come to these places, invite them free maybe for a couple of times, then you might get.
Let me just interject one thing, Harold. We just recently became nonprofit and submitted our first grant. And as part of that, I called up the Carver Rec Center because as jazz, I mean, you know, should have at least we would like to think that it would be attractive to the African-American community. Although, you know, you come to our performances and there are not very many African-Americans that come out to hear jazz. They seem to be listening to different genres of music. So I called the Carver Rec Center and spoke with some people over there and found out that they have a stage and an auditorium.
Yeah.
And we said, well, gee, wouldn't it be great to, you know, if we get this funding, to run some of the master classes that we want to have right there in the Carver Rec Center. And that way, you know, the kids that are already there would have an opportunity to be exposed to that. The master classes would be free. So it would be, you know, a great opportunity to do exactly what you're talking about.
Well, it's plenty of spaces in areas that you normally don't think about. I'm pretty sure it's spaces at Friendship Court that you can use for an event or to do some kind of training. So the space over West Haven. QCC got space. Rhonda could find you space somewhere in a Hispanic neighborhood. I mean, there's so many resources that people are not really tapping into
right. To
really get things going.
Harold, could you say a little bit, we were talking about technology, we were talking about, are people emailing, how are they getting information? Could you say in your community, when you're knocking, since a lot of us are not trying to communicate that way, when you're knocking on doors, could you give us an idea of what kind of resistance you find or what kind of engagement you find? What happens when you go on the knock?
Well, it's amazing because we was doing our concerted. And, you know, it depends on the weather, depends on the time, depends on the day.
But, what you're wearing.
Yeah, depends on what you're wearing.
Really?
And it depends on who you're going with in that neighborhood that knows people. Like, you know, I know West Haven very well. You know, I know mamas, I know daddies, I know aunts, I know grandmothers. And so when me and Bree walked on the neighborhood, we found kids who wanted to do something. But if we didn't do that, we wouldn't find no kids. So
is transportation an issue?
Transportation is a big issue.
But not for that particular program. That program. So we've taken various steps to try to get the kids involved. The first is taking the program to them. We do a Keep It Real program, which is a filmmaking program that we do at Friendship Court and at West Haven, and also with the Walker Scholars Program at Walker Upper Elementary School. And so, first of all, we're taking it to them. And then the next thing that we do is flyers that we hand out door-to-door. And I think that this spring we have handed out about 150 flyers total at both housing developments. That does nothing. I mean, the flyers did nothing. What really, really does it is going door-to-door and getting them and making that personal contact and also doing it again and again. I think that tenacity, that you really have to be tenacious and personal and make that personal contact. Otherwise, it's just another thing that is getting thrown away.
See, but the difficulty in that, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but the difficulty in that is that, you know, the personnel as a part of the jazz society is all volunteer, and we have very few people, so we can't...
Oh, but you, yourself, can come. If they see your face, you know what I'm saying, it don't matter if you have one person or 1,000 people. If somebody see your face and you are walking with somebody else in the neighborhood, your face is going to be familiar with that neighborhood. Now, the biggest way to get to a parent is through the kids. And when you get the kids to know your name, when you walk into that neighborhood, the parent's going to say, who is that and what is he doing? And then they're going to latch on to you. So it doesn't matter how much personnel you got. Music Resource, they do not have that much personnel that they really want, right? But they came in the neighborhood. They came in the neighborhood with one person, and he rocked. I mean, the kids loved him. And so it doesn't matter. It's just, you got to be able to show your face in those neighborhoods where you think that those neighborhoods don't want your face.
I think that just is across the board. Aside from just talking about accessibility, aside from the Music Resource Center, me as a performing artist myself, I found that in any situation when I do shows, the people that I touch, physically touch and say, hey, you need to come, those are the people that come. I could send out 1,000 emails. I have a mailing list that's like 1,800 people in this area, and it's still the people that I touch when I look out in the audience. I'm like, oh, I saw that person on Tuesday, that person on Thursday, and whatever. And those are the people that show up. And it's the same thing with the Music Resource Center. When we go into the schools, when we meet the kids at the career fairs, when I'm walking down the street in my neighborhood and I see a kid that I haven't seen in a month and a half, and I say, yo, where have you been? And he's like, oh, I was thinking about coming up there. Are you still up there? Yeah, I'm still up there. 2 days later, you know, shows up at the Music Resource Center. It is that physical touch. No matter how much flyering you do or how many emails that you send, it's all really a lot of junk in the end.
I also don't want to overlook the collaboration that is possible in the room if we all just come together and speak to one another. Mm-hmm. I don't want to downplay the individual connections because I think that's very important. And I also think that we, you know, accessibility doesn't come easy. If we want to make a difference, then you have to put the work into it. But even on the next level, to make it even a little easier, there are nonprofits around the room that don't know that these programs exist.
Yeah, right.
And I'm astounded as someone who's worked for nonprofits in the community and is now on the funding side to get grant applications for arts accessibility issues, or everybody's got their own initiative. And there's so much duplication and not enough collaboration, and that yet there's so much potential in a town of this size to actually change the way we do things. It should not be that hard in Charlottesville, quite frankly, or in our region, if we just have more of these conversations. And so at the very least today, I think just connecting and using each other as resources could be a huge step forward. And putting it out there and mapping it, and how, you know, this nonprofit can hook up with this arts program, or vice versa, because there is a lot of duplication and not enough collaboration.
And so venues along those same lines, there's venues that we don't know exist. I think Joel was talking about, and a lot of us are looking to outreach and bring, in our case, jazz, but other types of arts as well, into the communities, and we don't know if there's a stage and a little auditorium, you know. So that's one concrete thing that I'd like to see come out of this, is our list of these places, and, you know, that's part of the collaboration with these groups.
It's been a lot of hands. I saw
Blurs
first.
Should I go? I'm happy to.
I agree with what Holly said. I feel like the more we collaborate in different programs, the more powerful we will be as a community. And in speaking about the Latinos in particular, I feel like it has to be a one-on-one, like Harold said. I mean, they see your face. I'm in Southwood 3-4 times a week. I mean, I know every family. I know everyone who's pregnant. I know every child that's coming up there. So anyone that walks with me in that neighborhood has instant credibility. But what I notice is that I'm trying to throw art in there, and I have great resistance from the families, because the families are trying to survive, they're trying to eat, they're trying to, you know, just make ends meet. So I just feel like, you know, the children need to be taught about art and music. They are the ones who are going to be the next generation that we're really talking about. I mean, we can talk about everyone who's older right now or in their 20s, but if, I mean, I'm not saying that's impossible. It's just, I just feel like if we have finite resources and energy, and we focus it on the up and coming generation, you know, they're the ones who really are going to profit and benefit from our time. Because I was talking to one kid yesterday. He was so excited today. He was going to Richmond because he was going to a museum. He has no clue what a museum is. He has no clue about anything. But coming back, I assure you, he's going to want to go and have another opportunity. So those are the things that we, if we work together and make that happen, we're really creating a very rich generation coming up.
Sorry, I was late. I attended 2 weeks ago. I was invited to attend a final overview session that the Richard Florida team has done. They've actually initiated in Roanoke. Roanoke was one of the cities chosen by the Florida team to participate in the creative cultural community development. And accessibility was a really big issue in Roanoke that they were talking about. And one of the things that came out of it that was really interesting was the connection to churches. And when we're talking about a connection to community, a lot of times in the various communities around, you know, in the bigger city area, these folks are very, very connected to their churches. And I mean, it's a place of, you know, just them all coming together in a relaxed environment without a lot of the pressures that, you know, normally maybe their lives hold, and it's a safe space there. And the church community around it was really, really outspoken. I don't know, is anybody here representing a church? And the way this all came out was very non-denominational. It did not have anything to do with the religious aspect. It had to do with how do we connect within these various communities, you know, the going door to door, you know, how do they find the people to really help them in this outreach and break down some of the barriers. And if you've been to Roanoke, there are bridges that separate the city proper where a lot of the art and, you know, programming is going on from the actual communities where the people live. And they're starting, they're calling it bridging. And it's, you know, Sunday after church, everybody's just coming out of their churches and they're walking across the bridges from both communities to kind of meet one another in the middle. And so they're having this big focus on exchanging ideas and just getting people to come out and be participants. So they look, number one, at, you know, where is everyone? Where are they? Where do they collect on a regular basis? What is a day that they do that? How can we all pull something like that together? And in doing that now, ideas are starting to come to the table, things that the community of us types hadn't even thought of, because now they're really listening to the folks in the community about what is difficult for them to reach over and get into those arts and into that programming. So I found that a really wonderful exchange. And years ago, like, well, 2 or 3 years ago, Rose, when was it? We did My Nappy Roots?
Maybe two.
2 years ago. I have a girlfriend who did a documentary called My Nappy Roots, which is a cultural history, and I brought her here to Charlottesville. And what was really fun with that is we connected through the churches, we connected with the communities, we connected with the hair salons, you know, and the hair suppliers all across Charlottesville. And it was wonderful to just, you know, get the conversations going and get people talking about the various different issues. But we had to reach out and you know, stop our ideas of simple marketing, which is flyers and advertisements and radio and that kind of stuff. And Damani's right. Every person we touched came. I mean, I saw so many people at the actual event itself that I had been seeing in the weeks prior, and they got involved. They got excited. They got involved. So trying to figure out a way to perpetuate that momentum and look for the out-of-the-box places where people congregate.
There's a hand over here, and then...
I just wanted to touch again on that issue of leveraging resources, because at the Center for Nonprofit Excellence, we have a website where we have a list of meeting and some exhibition spaces that our nonprofits have put up. Any nonprofit can do it. It doesn't have to be a member. But it strikes me that if there are two issues here. One is having nonprofits who are providing art services, helping them figure out where to access actual participants. And then on the other side of that, connecting those arts organizations with the participants. And so on the meeting and exhibition space and coordination and leveraging of resources, we have something that exists, and we'd be happy to help build that out in a way that made sense.
I want to pause just quickly and explain in a nutshell the idea behind our Arts Access Initiative, because I think it relates directly to what you just suggested, and I want to be sure I get your feedback on it before you leave today. The idea is just what you're saying, that there's a lot of programming already taking place that's diverse, that's free or low cost, that's geared towards communities in need, or open to anybody, regardless of what community you represent. Many of those programs are accessible by public transportation or in walking distance to downtown neighborhoods, and yet there still isn't a whole lot of exchange or diversity amongst the audiences that are participating in those things, other than perhaps some age diversity when the cost is cut a little bit. So the idea behind the Arts Access Project is that PCA will help coordinate some of these collaborative efforts that folks like Holly are suggesting we be sure to engage in, by putting arts organizations that are already doing the programming together with communities that that for whatever reason are not accessing the programming that's being designed for them or that's available to them at very little cost, and helping to coordinate activities that join one with the other without designing something that can't be done again without our help, if that makes any sense. So constructing an activity in a way that could very easily be taken advantage of a month later, a year later, et cetera, and then following up with those participants over time to find out if they did go back to do it on their own. If they did, why? If they didn't, why? And is it a transportation issue? Is it a time issue? Is it that nobody came to my door and knocked on my door and said, come to this program, I'm putting my hand on your shoulder? You know, what's going on? And if they aren't coming back, do we care? You know, what do we do about it? And, you know, the questions go on and on.
Couple of things. First of all, and I'm going to sound real cynical, that's generally what I do, art is extra, right? For people who are really working hard to survive from day to day, art is a luxury. And so the folks who design the arts programs need to, number one, be aware of that and to seek the input of the people who they want, the audience they want to reach, to find out about some of these sort of convenience issues, and you know, who is our audience and how can their input shape what we do. Arts providers, there is a little bit of an onus on them to do a little bit better with outreach, but there's also an onus on those of us who do community outreach to be able to be a bridge for you. My organization, the Quality Community Council, we have hosted the UVA Art Museum, the Christian Berry exhibit. The Art Museum came out into the community, gave a talk, talked to community members in designing it, and gave out free memberships. So you have to be willing to come outside of your comfort zone, but then seek out folks who can help you with this. We work with the Virginia Film Festival to make sure that they get diversity in their audiences, and they're generous with giving tickets. Sage Moon Gallery, many of these. We've worked with Music Resource Center, McGuffey Arts, and several others for a one-time-only sort of special grant program called Art Zone, where we walked kids from venue to venue so that they understood that they could get there. But there is a need for follow-up. There's a need for funding for this type of regular, to recognize that the connection is valuable, that neither of these can happen without the other. But a willingness to get an understanding of how to reach your audience and how to design programming for your audience, but then also find somebody who can help you. I'm in the Jazz Society, but I get so many emails, I get overwhelmed. But then I get emails from someone affiliated with Rydell's group that says, come to Bell Rio, and I go, oh, maybe I'll come to that. Because it's just one thing. So, for what that's worth.
John and Sibley.
Yeah, just to tap into what you were just saying, I mean, we're certainly, as I was mentioning before, I mean, Old Capitol Hall has 856 seats. Very few of our concerts come ever close to selling out, the only exceptions being Tuesday Evening Concert Series, which isn't even out, which is a guest thing, and the symphony. We're interested in increasing the diversity and size of our audience. So anybody from disadvantaged, minority, underrepresented communities who's interested in tickets, we're interested in working with you. We want to reach out and we want to increase that contact. Just contact me.
We work in West Haven and some of the other communities and try to take music opportunities to young people and sort of go to places where we can find captive audiences. But one thing that I've become very aware of is that, you know, you have a set program and it's finite, and once it ends, you know, your footpath ends, and then all the kids go away, and then you have to remarket to kids, and it's very challenging. And I guess my perspective is I don't think we're going to have real success elevating art to the place that we all want it to be in every community, in our community, until we have concrete centers that have continuous art operations going on in the very communities in which we want to have them. And we have a lot of underutilized facilities in our community that could house such entities, such as Parks and Rec, you know, Tonsler Park. West Haven has a great center. We we wrote a grant to try to put a music lab down there. We didn't get the funding for it. But something like that, you know, eventually, you know, if you're going to have parents and adults and children, of course, utilizing a center like that and seeing it as having value, it has to be accessible for them. It has to exist in their community. It has to look like an attractive, cool, fun place to go. And it has to have continuous program offerings that are right there in that community. And I think in that way, you elevate art to the status that we'd all like it to be, that it is a functional part of life that has a huge role in everybody's creativity and their growth.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'd like to kind of go back to something that was said earlier and to agree with you. I think we need to stop thinking about art as being an extra. And I think that we do look at it that much. But how powerful, and we all know how powerful art is, and so that we really need to get it out to all people. And what I've found in therapeutic recreation, of anything that I do, the art helps the individual's self-confidence more than anything. And then it helps them in getting jobs, and it helps them in socializing with people. But it often starts first with that art, and I've just never seen anything as powerful as art. And so I think we need to realize that it shouldn't be an extra. It should be for everyone, and that we really need to reach those people.
I'll let him go first, responding to that.
Well, it's all part of this conversation.
Go ahead.
It's an idea that just sort of was thinking about in terms of accessibility. And music, and although it flows into a lot of other things, you know, the Fridays after 5, maybe this is Dave Norris could take back to people in the city council. You know, the music that's played at in the pavilion, we got to realize there, you know, it changes somewhat from week to week. But I must say that for me, we usually come down, but the music isn't that appealing. How about if we had that continue as it has, which is fine, but then we think of quadrants. So where the city market is on Saturday, maybe there's a hip-hop group. Lee Park, there's something else, maybe a jazz group. Down where the Omni is, maybe there's a klezmer group or something else. So you've got these quadrants, they're far enough apart so that the sound isn't intruding on some other, you know, performance, but good performers, not just like the street people, which are interesting too, but something a little more elevated and professional, where you've got you know, different things. It's all free.
Mm-hmm. All on the same day.
And
same time.
All at Fridays after 5. Mm-hmm. But different offerings with different music genres and different parts of that downtown area that, you know, I know the kids could walk, you know, up into it. You know, it would certainly be more appealing to me.
Mm-hmm. Those things are really successful too. They do something similar in D.C. and Atlanta has one. Philadelphia has the same thing. And I think Charlottesville, especially how close the communities are together, mm-hmm. that you could really have something successful if the city came and supported and expanded on what's already existing there. And just to have that kind of diversity moving around in the same area, maybe there's different groups
right.
that are going to be crossing, and people are going to be seeing each other.
Right. And I mean, people who are here could have tables there with literature. You know, you're interested in the Jazz Society, here's something. You need something from the Music Resource Center, we offer these programs. Take this, you know, talk to us.
When Karen mentioned art is extra, I had a similar response that Mildred had, because art, for those of you who are artists in the room, perhaps a little offended that it's extra. But that's not her intent. Her, I mean, what I heard you say was, we see art as something extra. And I think because we do see it that way, that's part of the issue, is that we think it's something that we can do without. And I think initiatives that say, this is something we need, and for many of you who are artists, you need to be artists. And so one of the things I'd like to see is us make art central to what we do, not an add-on thing. Because one of the things that I think people suffer from worldwide and in our community that's consistent all around the world is you have gifts and talents that are not being used and are not tapped into. And I think art is a way to bring out particular gifts and talents that aren't otherwise tapped into. So whether it be music or whether it be poetry, whether it be dance, I think we need to bring it all to our communities and allow that to summon a lot of those gifts and talents that are untapped, that are unseen.
I want to keep taking comments, but I also want to feed you. So I'm going to pause for a minute, and really quickly I want to run down some words that we've come back around to before we break. Visibility, location, diversity of programming, programming versus participation, the push and pull involved in terms of getting people to come out to things, technology and information, transportation, the need for collaboration to reduce the duplication of efforts, the role of kids and families and the units that work together, the role of churches, producing in a way that allows people to be hands-on and express themselves, also witness a variety of different kinds of art genres. And I think we're talking a lot about performing arts, but we should also think about visual arts, too.
Can I just say one thing before we go to lunch? Because I want to clarify my comment about art being extra. It's perceived as extra. And part of the visual arts, for example, you come into my office, the first thing you see is art, because we make sure that we always have art on the walls. When we're at our garden, we bring performing artists. But there are ways to do it in a way that is seamless, that doesn't require someone to make an extra step. And so that's the point. Thank you.
You're listening to the Piedmont Council of the Arts Creative Conversation on Increasing Community-Wide Access to the Arts, brought to you by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com. You can check out our arts podcasts, search arts anywhere in our search box, and if you're interested in contributing your own arts podcasts, send us a line at wordcast@gmail.com or comment somewhere on this blog. After a lunch donated by Harvest Moon Catering, the creative conversation continued with a discussion of what was discussed during the focus groups.
Okay, so did you talk about arts access as small groups or not? Be honest. Oops, oh, careful. Goodness, I saw that. So a couple things. I want to make sure we can all sort of report to each other what we discussed over lunch, but I don't want to take a significant portion of our last 30 minutes to do that. So let's sort of whiz around and do kind of a quick snapshot of what you discussed, and then come back together and talk about how we want to use the last, say, 20 minutes of the conversation. We have to do evaluations before you leave. Don't let me forget. It's the yellow sheet in your packet. But also, Holly mentioned to me that I do want to come back to the project that PCA is coordinating and look at that as a resource for us to collaborate with one another. We have funding set aside to do exactly some of the things that we're talking about, work together, join forces, and I think our first step is going to be to convene a smaller group of folks just like you to start talking nuts and bolts about what we can do in the next year with this amount of funding as a first step towards some of the ends that we're discussing. So I'll come back to that before you leave today, and I hope that at least a handful of you will be willing to be part of a team to help us get our ducks in a row as we get going on the Arts Access Project. But we'll start with this side of the room this time, and just give us a little overview of what you discussed.
I was in a different group, and we talked about how schools and Parks and Rec aren't here today, and the question about priority of funding. Priority funding by the city in terms of is Parks and Rec interested in investing in programs that would be at community centers and so on, and where is their priority? So when we look at access.
Mildred Spicer works with Parks and Recreation, and some other representatives were invited but couldn't be here today, but it's a very good point, and they're a big partner for PCA and a lot of our programming.
We also talked about the comment, the artist extra comment, which I understand is a perception, and one of the things that just jumps out at me, and I've heard this a lot, you hear it in the schools, a friend of mine, who Andy Johnson, who came to one of the first events that you held here, he's been the coordinator for Gifted and Talented here in Charlottesville. The position was just eliminated. So, you know, where do the arts go now? He basically was the coordinator for arts programming in the school system. So, you know, one of the things that all of this is tied to is an identity crisis that the arts had. Art is culture, it's heritage, it's science, it's woven into all forms of curricula, and that has been something that there's been a disconnect in our country for a very, very long time that I think we need to start talking about it in different ways, in terms of talent in different ways, you know, really looking at talent in terms of where it's going. There's a workforce development component of the arts. I represent the Artisan Center of Virginia. We are an industry. Craftsmanship in this state is about cultural heritage, it's about talent, it's about creativity, and it's also about economic development and industry. And if we can start talking in those terms, then art is no longer going to be extra. Art is very powerful and important. And Marty pointed out that, I mean, there, and everybody knows this, there are numerous studies that show that when you integrate art into curriculum, brain development changes. I mean, music especially has a very profound effect on learning, as does certain color usages and that type of thing. So I think we need to start to really talk to people in terms of the value and the importance that the various different arts bring to the table to make it relevant. And in the context of what I said earlier, going out into the communities, it's about the story oftentimes too. You know, we're using art to deliver a story, and parents, I think, who are extremely busy might be more interested in the value of that story more so than the event. So the connecting to the designers who are putting the program together so that they start to put programming together that really reaches out to that story. And then, of course, economics. I'm always focused on the economic aspect. We're talking about setting up, you know, maybe four different performance areas on the mall, and you know, where's the funding going to come to support that kind of thing? Accessibility is extremely tied to funding.
Sure.
And economics, and we are all working in nonprofits that have very little, have had it majorly cut back, so where do we go to increase accessibility and the resources we need to do that? Bingo.
When you were, Maggie, when you were listing the words that had come out earlier, I thought of one which had struck me. And in fact, in my conversation with Rydell, we touched on it, and that is personal contact. People mentioned that, I think, particularly on that side of the room. It's very interesting and salutary to be reminded that it's the most basic kind of communication, the most physical kind of communication, the hand on the shoulder, the eyeball to eyeball, that really is the most effective, because you can only communicate enthusiasm directly. And you can send, you know, we talk about emails, we talk about podcasting, all these sorts of things, but yet they tend to wash over people, whereas it's the hardest form of communication, which is getting out and going to see someone.
And that requires volunteers, and this community, I think, is full of people that are ready and willing to volunteer for the arts or for communities in need. So.
Yeah.
I don't think anything to add, so...
I guess we were talking a little bit about some of the opportunities that Old Cava Hall and Garrett Hall would have for tickets for potential visits from our students that we work with, and kind of a collaboration that we could do there. We have a lot of kids that we could maybe work out getting over there. So that was a little interesting.
Yeah, I think getting the music into the schools is really important. We do have the symphony has a pretty extensive outreach program. They go into a lot of the schools and stuff, but I don't think we really have a mechanism at this point for getting our other music, because we represent the whole gamut of music. We have world music, we do jazz, we do contemporary music, we do classical, we do, you know, a little bit of everything. So that would be hard, but I just say for myself, in terms of, I think somebody was saying about, you know, getting starting getting the kids interested in the arts at an early age. I mean, I grew up in the era of the three R's. I don't know if anybody remember reading, writing, and arithmetic. And there was always these budgetary issues. There were always the people, usually on the right, who were trying to cut out the arts program because they thought it was extra. And I went to a school where we were lucky enough to still have a full-time music teacher, and it made a huge difference. That's probably one of the main reasons why I ended up, why I went into music and ended up staying.
I want to follow up on the importance of the arts to young people, to everybody. Picking up on something we heard in George Sampson's class last week about music as medicine, music and the arts in general. And we heard testimony from musicians whose lives in many ways were actually saved by music. And ever since then, I keep coming across threads on the internet and in the newspapers of this idea of music and the arts interacting with healthcare fields and how important this is. And there's an address given by somebody at a music school, I can't remember which one, in New England, that I can email people, but it basically says artists need to be not just important, but they are emergency personnel, paramedics, that should be out there helping people through their arts. And so it's something else to think about and other connections that can be made maybe with the healthcare field.
Our group and Kate joined our group discussed the increasing relevancy of the arts to people's lives, and Kate and I discussed, well, in my mind, there are kind of two main ways to do that. One is education of children, which is definitely the specialty of these two. And then Kate and I talked about how artists themselves need to change the way they're approaching their art, especially coming from a visual arts background. Art is something extra to a lot of people because, I don't know, just looking at the gallery setting, like visual arts, like that has nothing to do with a lot of people's lives. It's for rich people, it's elitist, and I don't know, it's even if you do go door to door, it's going to be hard to convince people why they should go to a gallery. So artists need to look at what they're actually doing and change their practice. And then if you guys want to talk about education.
For our group, we discussed the importance of the education starting with the younger child, because the neighborhood that I work in, you know, we have the parents, but we also have a large range of children. And what I've noticed with working with my residents for 2 years is if you can gain the trust and respect of the children and allow them to see that whatever you're asking them to get involved with is interesting and will be beneficial, then you can reach the parents. So I think instead of starting at such a higher level and having such a big expectation as to, oh, we're providing this at a free cost or we're given this opportunity, let's start out not with such big expectation, not with such big numbers, but reach the smaller population, the population that isn't looked at to be interested. And that's what my neighborhood that I work in, we look at and we face, you know, and we have someone to come in and just say, we're here to offer this. You know, we're not expecting a great big turnout, but maybe two or three. You know, the word of mouth. And that's what we were talking about, starting it at a young age with the preschoolers, the kindergartners, and then we would have the arts for the adults at a later time, you know, once the children get more interested. So that's where, you know, we kind of ballpark and with the children and with the residents of communities that aren't looked at, because that's where I work and that's my passion. So.
Well, I think for my organization particularly, we have a lot of challenges because our art is more planning and design and how our neighborhoods function, how our communities function, even up to transportation, and things that are hard to kind of translate in our gallery into something that's interesting. So there's one challenge there that we struggle with a lot. But also, you know, not to harp on the art as extra comment, but actually for us, it kind of unfortunately is, because we can't get funding for our exhibit space and our gallery space, but we can get funding for, you know, other types of projects. And so you know, it's sort of, it's something that I believe so strongly in, and I believe that in the exhibits and in the gallery and in the visual part of our work, because it's exciting and it makes us, you know, it really kind of connects you to what's going on. But at the same time, you know, if I have a list of things to do and it's not being funded, it kind of unfortunately does get the sort of, here's how, you know, we have a lot of people that come into our space, but it is a lot of the same type of mainly designers, architects, planners. And so I want to be a lot more proactive about how to sort of outreach better in the community. But at the same time, unfortunately, and it's not an excuse, it's just sort of how it is that it is a very unfunded part of our work.
When we were talking a little bit, people have mentioned as well about just finding captive audiences and meeting people where they are and trying, instead of us really trying to reinvent the wheel. I mean, so getting into the schools, going into the jails, that's literally captive audience. But I mean, like finding people, finding people where they are and they're already, you know, pursuing programs, courses of study, activities, whatever, and weaving art into that. And so we have a program that we funded this summer. It's an urban design program at Charlottesville High School, where we're tying together, you know, course of study about your neighborhood, about urban planning, but also bringing in architecture and design, and then trying to weave that in with our summer youth employment program, just finding out where these existing activities are happening and how do we weave them together.
I'm going to talk about the brief conversation I had with Maggie at the break, because I think it's important. I think there's so much potential in this room, and if I'm going to be annoying, I apologize, but I'm going to harp on the collaboration, because there is a lack of capacity and a lack of resources, because a lot of the nonprofits in this room are struggling to do all the good work that you do on limited resources. And as someone who has to turn down almost half of the grants, I get every grant cycle with a committee of volunteers who helps me with that process. We always recognize the importance of arts, but sometimes when you're comparing a grant application and it's, you know, filling the food bank in an arts program, sometimes that's very hard. And the general point is there's not enough money out there to fund all of this. And so what's important is that we collaborate and work together and share resources. And I want to go back to the Arts Access Initiative only because it couldn't come at a perfect time. I think there's a hesitancy, maybe on Maggie's part, to talk about it because PCA doesn't want to seem like they're taking over the conversation. But I also think that these conversations are most productive when something tangible comes out of them. So whether it's more conversations or the small group, I encourage you all who are passionate about this and moving forward to work with Maggie to, because that pilot project could grow and lead to something where we really are working in a collaborative nature and we are really making progress at that accessibility issue through all of your good ideas and all of your good work.
Is that legal?
Yes.
Well, okay, I'll say something. One thing, sort of picking up on this collaborative thing, I was really just noting how much I do want to talk about. There's a lot of collaboration that's already going
yes,
on too,
right.
And I think that we can build on that by recognizing that it's already happening. There are a lot of connections that are happening, and I know that that it can happen in terms of programming, right? So that you combine forces to develop a single program, but also to sort of cross-promote each other. I mean, I know that I have kids who come to Lighthouse who have been at MRC who are like, oh yeah, I heard about you from over there, blah, 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 blah. And that's really helpful. And I know that we have the same thing with Live Arts too, that I'm always seeing a lot of, I mean, I feel like I'm always really eager to say, oh, have you thought about MRC? Have you thought about Live Arts? And really, getting that going, and that's a very helpful thing because it's taking the connections that are already existing and saying, let's open this up to a broader. This can expand and grow, and there's a bigger web here, and that's just what I'm thinking about.
I'm so glad you didn't pass. I guess I had a kind of a split break. I was talking to a couple people in different corners of the room. So coalescing that conversation into one comment might be that it seems to me, having been, I think, at most of these conversations, this is the, we have a lot of unfamiliar faces in the room today, I think. There are quite a few new people I haven't had to meet or I guess, maybe organizations not yet, I mean, not previously represented. That to me speaks volumes to what we're all about here, and I hope we can keep that going. Congratulations to both of you for doing that. I'm sure you put some effort into trying to get more people, new people here at the table. Let's keep that going.
I just want to say briefly, since I don't have a name card, but all of you are saying really great things, and I think this idea about health and the initiatives that telemedicine is doing at UVA, if you could link on to that, call them. Oh, great. And also, I'm thinking that with the galleries that are closing, if we don't have galleries, we don't have a democracy. We need to keep galleries open and be able to express ourselves freely in the public is what I think education should be about in the schools, because if we don't have that, we're going to have silence, we're going to have nothing, no expression, no venues. Or we can take all that type of gallery and put them in projections into the schools, into the hospitals, into everywhere, and combine all of these arts into projections through the computer is what is going on nationally. But it's just happening, it's evolving, we need the young people to get involved. So, because they know the technology, so.
We're down in 9 minutes. I just suddenly it crept up on me. So let's whiz really quickly to the rest of the people. Sorry.
Okay, we had several conversations, but one was on networking and the importance of that and connecting the dots. And then also talking about that each community is different. And I'm a native, so kind of the way I look at Charlottesville is different from a new person that comes in. And what I often hear from new people, new artists or people involved with the arts, that they have a really hard time figuring out Charlottesville and understanding the art community.
Yeah, that's what we talked about there. Because I've lived all across the country, in about from Texas to California to Florida to Illinois, and that's just what we discussed was the vast difference that I found just getting a job here, period. You know, it's a very hard, you have to hardcore town, I think, here to just network, period. Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether it's the arts or not. And so there's lots of other things to say. I know we need to get around the room.
From my perspective, as being part of the Center for Nonprofit Excellence, I'm looking forward to the opportunity to be available to build collaboration and leverage resources with, you know, our current resources and the opportunity to work with other groups. Thanks.
This is Rose. We met at Juneteenth last year. I saw it at a presentation?
The Art Celebration.
Yeah.
The annual Juneteenth celebration over at Piedmont.
Yeah, so she said, so we talked about that. My question sitting here today as we were talking was, how did I get access to this group? How was it that I was invited to be here? I participated in art in various places at various times, and I tend to find it pretty intense kind of things, that stuff that goes on. So I went to Kate and I said, Kate, how did I get invited? And she gave me a clue, and I'm going to follow up on that clue, and now it's Rose.
Okay, I'm going to say quickly that I've been a part of a couple of public art projects. One was the design of the McGuffey Park, the mosaic wall, and the other was the Belmont Park wall. And I think that's a great way to get kids involved in art, is invite them to be a part of these public art projects. And I'd like to see a lot more of that happen in Charlottesville.
Okay, that's all I have to say.
I talked with an artist about ways to seamlessly integrate art into people's lives and into programming that nonprofits are doing. I just find that's the effective thing to do. One of our primary things that we do is we grow food, but we usually have some art going on at the same time. We're just going to do a sculpture next to our garden. We've had Lighthouse do a film of it. So there are ways to integrate it where people don't even know that they're being asked to do something. And we are all creative enough to figure that out.
Well, I don't have too much to say, but I do want to say that Martin was right, but having different music genres in different areas of Charlottesville. When I was growing up, Washington Park was a big place for African Americans to go hear a band, maybe jazz, maybe blues, maybe R&B, but they took all that out the parks, and I don't know why, but that'd be a good way of also jump-starting something in the park, was to be integrating art and music together, but that'd be a great place to do it.
I just want to jump on to what Polly said, if there's not enough funding for all these programs. I guess I want to play counterpoint and say that according to the After School Alliance, there are 15 million kids who are unsupervised every day in our country. 40,000 of them are in kindergarten. 4 million of them are in middle school. And that means that the temptations for them to get in trouble and the cost of, you know, when they do get in trouble, whether it's teen pregnancy or STDs or violence, or all the things that we know kids get into, that cost is absolutely phenomenal compared to the cost of our programs. It costs $50,000 a year to incarcerate a young person, national average. So, you know, the cost of our programs is minuscule compared to what it costs for those other problems that we'll create if we all go away. So I challenge each of us to go out and pitch that to our community and help them understand that if we don't do what we do, then the cost will be phenomenal to all of us.
Yeah, and I just have to follow up with that because I don't want to come across and be misperceived since Karen got to qualify her statement, is that... I think many funders in this town get it, and the arts are very important, and I'm not here to say that they're not. In fact, what I was trying to say is I wish there were more money. And the reality is, especially with the economic situations that we're dealing with and endowments taking a hit all over, not only local funders, but national funders, is that I wish there were more money. And in times when there are and in times when they're not, it doesn't matter when there's money or when there's not money, it's always better when we collaborate. And it's always better when we decrease duplication, because everything is going to be that much stronger. And it's amazing to me, just to reiterate what Bree said, there's really good collaboration going on in this community, but it could be better. And so the question is, how do we make it better? Because at the end of the day, if we got 20 proposals doing the same thing, only one could be funded. And that's just the reality of it.
Thank you, everybody. Before we get to closing things, I don't want to leave us hanging. Kate, would you mind helping us on this? I want to create a list of priorities based on what we've talked about, just so that we leave knowing what we think the most important issues that we've discussed today are. I have a few that I wrote down which you can take issue with, like or add to. One that I heard a lot is the importance of seamless integration, of working with what's already in motion, what's already happening, groups that are already congregating, or programs that are already funded, things that people are already wanting to do, whether it's eat pizza or go to church. And that is key in terms of access. Another thing that I heard a lot about was young people, and it seems like when we have a plethora of different communities within communities that for whatever reason might have low access, young people are where we think we should start. For a variety of reasons that I won't go into. Are there any other... I have more, but I want to give you guys opportunities.
Yeah, from an administrative standpoint, I think, at least from my opinion, my perspective, we need to meet again frequently. I mean, I don't see if we all walk away now and don't have another meeting for 6 months, you know.
Well, that's.
I think, and I don't know what that frequency is, but it may be. I mean, if we're interested in trying to network, get to know each other better, figure out who's doing what, and avoid some of this overlap that's happening, you know, within the community, we have to meet more frequently. Maybe once a month for the next 3 months or 6 months, or once every 2 weeks for the next 3 months, and then it can go out to quarterly. But I think if we don't have some sort of a consistent mm-hmm. opportunity to get together and talk.
Two things in response to that. One, I'm going to be inviting all of you to be part of a team to respond to the Arts Access Project, and you'll get an email from me within the next week. Don't feel obligated, but I can tell you right now that if every single one of you said you wanted to participate, I'd be thrilled. So keep that in mind. It will be not a huge commitment, but at least initially in May, one meeting, and maybe some throughout the summer as we plan the program. Second thing is, in terms of the Creative Conversation series, next year, as I mentioned, we'll be doing smaller, more frequent focus groups to look more deeply at the topics from a, you know,
you're talking brainstorming. 2010?
2009, 2010. The Arts Access Project started, like, immediately. So for this topic, we're going to get rolling. But next year, starting in September, we'll do another series of conversations about education, marketing, and arts access.
Just taking a lesson from, again, the Richard Florida team and how they do this type of thing, too, I just want to throw out the idea, kind of a variation on what Marty's saying, to possibly come together, bring some people together to really create some initiatives for this community. I think we're doing a lot of really great sharing, and Maggie's doing a tremendous job following up and getting people engaged, and there's a lot of collaboration going on, I think, outside of this. Since the very first one of these events, I've seen already quite a change on the collaborative front in this community. But to really give this some teeth, and this is something I've been looking for the Piedmont Council for the Arts to do for a while now, is to really sink into pulling together a collaborative effort that comes forth with some initiatives. I mean, if we could come up with three things that in a collaborative environment could really take some of the ideas from these three sessions that she's had this year, and that become part of the impetus for the next year, rather than just continuing to chat about, you know, the State of the Union all the time, I think we would be much further along in this community towards seeing some bigger change.
We've got one initiative. That's Arts Access. So we've
right.
got one down. Maybe right. we'll get the other two throughout next year. Any other summarizing priority thoughts? It's okay if there are. George?
Thanks for right here.
Oh, good.
Please fill this out. You've been listening to the Piedmont Council of the Arts Creative Conversation on Increasing Community-Wide Access to the Arts, brought to you by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. If you're interested in carrying on the conversation, please leave a comment on our blog or visit the Piedmont Council of the Arts website at charlottesvillearts.org. I'm Sean Tubbs, and thank you for listening.